As an introduction to stanza 18, this blessed soul, now knowing how richly she has been blessed with graces, virtues, and God's gifts, and also loving visits from her spouse, also sees that she does not enjoy them as much as she likes, because the body is an obstacle. This is a source of intense pain, as she often becomes aware of the absence of her beloved. She feels like a prisoner, even though she knows that she is gifted like a noble lord. Under this condition, she sees herself subjected to 1,000 miseries, while her possessions are taken from her, and she is prevented from using her riches for her own delight. Even her servants, he's talking about our senses and so forth, even her servants have no respect for her and turn against her and steal from her the very food she would enjoy. Take the imagination. It's not under our control all the time. When God presents her with some of the food he has especially prepared for her by his loving visits, the body appetites and senses and feelings become disorderly and rebel against the spirit. The result of all this is that the soul feels she is among enemies and being tyrannized in the midst of strangers. Protesting against all this pain and annoyance from her sense nature, the soul requests an end of them and to have the senses completely subject to her spirit. She turns also to her bridegroom, who will eventually bring this about, while addressing these rebellious senses in these words: "You girls of Judea, while among flowers and roses, the amber spreads its perfume, stay away there on the outskirts. Do not so much as seek to touch our thresholds." So the bride is speaking here and wants to preserve the secure possession of the spiritual riches, gifts, and delights she has received from her beloved. She has experienced many times the results of her sense faculties and feelings being a source of confusion and annoyance to her when they are active and energetic. So she says, "You girls of Judea." Now, Judea here is identified with our sense nature. In other words, our eyes, our sense of taste, touch, smell, and so forth, and so on. It is weak and inclined to the flesh, and by itself is blind, like the people of Judea were to God. The term girls is applied to images, fantasies of the imagination, feelings and desires of the sense nature. They're called girls because girls attract lovers by their affectionate nature and gracefulness. So the pleasurable feelings and movements of her sense nature try persistently, as it were, to seduce the will of the spirit, to draw it away from its interior occupation with God to desire exterior things, the things which the senses crave. At the same time, they also try to draw the intellect to their way of feeling, thus reducing the spirit to the life of the senses. To all these sense movements and feelings, the soul says, "While among flowers and roses." Earlier, we saw that the flowers are identified with the perfect virtues of the bride's soul, and the roses, or rose bushes, refer to the faculties of intellect, will, and memory, which contain and nourish the flowers of God, the flowers of God's infused knowledge and insights, acts of love, and the virtues. There, in the midst of her faculties and her virtues, the amber spreads its perfume. Amber here is applied to the Holy Spirit, dwelling in the soul, who spreads the perfume of his presence and loving communications in an abundant overflow in the faculties and virtues. While all this is taking place, the soul says, "Stay away there on the outskirts." Outskirts is applied to the interior senses, sense memory, imagination. where words, images, and fantasies are stored. Our sense appetites are stirred by these images and fantasies. When these images are, as it were, asleep, our sense appetites are at rest. We need to know that these images, at the beginning, enter the imagination through our exterior senses of ear, eye, nose, and touch, taste, too. These are called the outskirts of the city, city meaning the soul, the inner part of the soul, the spirit, where it has communion with God. The working of the spirit and its activity is contrary to the activity of the sense part of us. Yet the way we are made, there is an easy communication between the girls in the outskirts of our sense nature and the inner part of the spirit. What happens in our sense nature is normally felt in our inner spirit. So there are distractions and confusions and a loss of peace and quiet in the spirit. So the soul addresses these interior and exterior senses in these words: "Do not so much as seek to touch our threshold." She means that she does not even want the faintest activity on their part to interfere with the inner part of her spirit. St. John of the Cross calls them first movements. That is, the first feeling of a desire for some pleasure, like food or recreation. We all experience these first feelings, whether we like it or not. We cannot avoid it. All our feelings come under this heading and apply to all our emotions, which surface at different times in our daily life: anger, hatred, love, fear, joy, hope, despair, like and dislike. For example, take a case of anger. Some incident that annoys us, like something mean said to us, and immediately feelings of anger well up within us. These are first movements. What we do with them when we are aware of them make them second movements. And then we are responsible for them at that point. But first movements we cannot control. They are automatic and not sinful. This is a precious insight to remember all your life, especially about your feelings. Now that applies in many levels in our feeling side of us. One area is sexual feelings, which often makes people very scrupulous. The fact that you're normal means that you will have sex feelings, whether you like it or not. They'll surface at certain times and even the most unforeseen times, at communion time or prayer time, and so forth. Now remember what we said about first movements. They are feelings. The first feeling of it is not a sin. It's only when your conscience and your intellect notices what it is and it steps in and says, well, now you know this is wrong. Now, at that point, you are responsible. Now, you may have to say this many times to yourself. The first feeling is not a sin. Remember that. So no matter how strong the sexual feeling, it even causes a lot of pleasure before you're fully aware of it. That's important. It's not a sin until your conscience says, uh-oh, be careful here. Then, before God, you are responsible. Now, that's true of anger. It's true of resentment, of a desire for revenge, and so forth, whatever. An injustice is done to you, say, and immediately you're ready to crush that person. Now, that's the first feeling. You're not responsible for that. But then your conscience will step in and say, well, now, you know what Jesus said, love one another as I love you. Do not be angry with one another. Do not go to bed angry. Forgive one another, and so on. All kinds of scripture texts can come. But at that point, you must act. If you continue to promote the resentment, the anger, then it is sin. But don't go to confession and say, Father, I was angry. And Father might say, so was I. So what? Were you guilty of anger? In other words, did you promote the anger when you knew it? That's only a temptation. The first movement is what you call invitation. So for your own peace of mind and anybody else that might come to you and share with you, remember that. That's very important. So having had this experience, the soul says to all these senses, do not go beyond the first movement and cross our threshold, meaning the spirit of the soul. Our Carmelite saint says, the first movements of our feelings and desires and appetites are the entrances and the thresholds of the soul. If these feelings and desires go beyond first movements, that is, begin to involve the soul to desire them, then they cause distraction and interfere with the joy of spirit when the beloved is visiting her. Here the soul even asks that even the first movement of the senses be kept away from the soul, as if she had no feelings or desires at all during this time. This knowledge should be applied by all of us to the area of temptations, which is an invitation to evil under the appearance of good. A temptation is the first movement of any of our senses or appetites. Sexual feelings is a common area where most people experience temptations. Through an image in the imagination, or just a sex feeling initiated in the sex organs, a person will experience what is called the first movement. It is just there without our being able to do anything to prevent it. But what you do when you recognize it makes you responsible after that. So first movements can be identified with temptations, which are not sins. But what we do after we know what the feelings are makes us responsible before God. Now, knowing that, we can say a million temptations never constitute a single sin. In marriage encounter, if you've made one, you've heard the saying, feelings are neither good or bad. It's what you do with them that make them good or bad. Because in their first movement, it's a natural response. It's automatic. We move on to stanza 19. At this level of the spiritual life, the soul finds that God's communications cannot be endured by its sense nature without fainting. And we're talking about something special, which our human nature cannot bear. It's a grace and a blessing and a nearness to God that is too much for our bodies. Because of other annoyances we've already described, which bring on anguish, frustration, and not being able to enjoy the loving communications of God in peace, the bride soul asks God to bestow his greatest, most enriching communications only on her spirit, apart from the senses. Now, St. Paul speaks of such a communication outside the body in 2 Corinthians 12:2, I believe. He says he's not sure it was outside the body or in the body. Now, St. John of the Cross says it must have been outside the body, because if it were in the body, Paul would have known it, and the communication and vision would not have been as elevated as he implies. So this soul, knowing that such favors as God now wishes to grant her cannot be received in the body, asks him in this stanza, hide yourself, my love, turn your face toward the mountains and do not speak, but look at those companions going with her through strange islands. I defy you to understand that. Well, here the bride soul asks the bridegroom for four things. First, to communicate himself to her in the deepest part of her spirit. Second, that he let the glory and excellence of his divinity infill and shine on her faculties. Third, that his communication to her be so sublime and deep that she will have no desire to describe it and have no words to do so, and also that her sense nature be unable to receive it. And fourth, that he be taken with love for her many virtues and gifts which he has bestowed on her. These spiritual treasures go with her as she flies in her journey to God by means of a very sublime knowledge of God's divinity and great loving encounters she experiences, which are very extraordinary when compared to what she has ordinarily known. So she says, "Hide yourself, my love." It's like saying, "My beloved, hide in the deepest part of my spirit and communicate yourself in secret. Show me your hidden wonders that are unknown to all mortal beings." And then the line, "Turn your face toward the mountains." Now, face means God's divinity. Mountains means the faculties of the soul, intellect, will, and memory. Put in other words, we might say it this way: let your divinity bestow your divine knowledge on my intellect and divine love to my will and the possession of glory on my memory. She is actually asking the Lord for all she can possibly request. No other knowledge will now satisfy her except knowing God's face by a special communication, which involves a certain contact of the soul with the divinity of God. This is completely out of the realm of the senses, and as our saint puts it, quote, "It is a touch of naked substances of the soul and the divinity," unquote. So the soul adds, "And do not speak." Now that is, do not speak as before, when your communications reach the exterior senses, but let your communications be so sublime, substantial, and interior that the senses will have no knowledge of them. Now remember that there had been communications earlier by visions, by words heard in the mind, or even exteriorly by the ear. To ask the bridegroom to refrain from speaking is like saying, let this spiritual union be so profound and hidden that the senses will not be able to feel or speak of it. And then the next line continues, but look at those companions. To say of God that he looks means that he loves and bestows favors. The companions that the soul asks God to look at are her many virtues, gifts, perfections, and other blessings that he's given her as part of her dowry for the espousal. It's like saying, my beloved, first turn to the inner depths of my soul and be taken with love of what is there, my riches, which you have put there, so that by loving my soul through them, you may hide in her. For even though these spiritual riches are yours, they are also mine, because you have given them to me. And then the final line, going with her through strange islands, is as if she wanted to place him under obligation, saying, since I go to you through a spiritual knowledge that is strange and foreign to the senses, let your communication be so interior and sublime as to be foreign to all the senses. Now that is what we'll cover today, and would like to leave some time for questions. I again forgot to ask you to put on your spacesuits, so if you were struggling for air, you can come down to earth now. Any questions? You have feelings of anger. What are you asking?
I'm asking because of the
wrong. No, apply what I said now. That feeling of anger would be what? A first movement. Now, we said what? That is not sinful. But if you know that it's sinful to entertain it and continue, then it's wrong. But no, also, let's put this in perspective. It's not wrong even to further anger about what's evil. We should be angry at evil. It's because enough people are not angry about the evil in the world today that we have so much evil. Okay? There's too much permissiveness. Wasn't Jesus angry?
Yes.
Angry at the Pharisees? Angry at the money changers? Angry at those who resisted his truth and the gifts that he gave them? Maybe you're suppressing the anger without knowing it. And that is not good. Because that anger is not released. It is only suppressed. But it's like a coiled spring. And you'll only push down so far and then it'll erupt in another way and you won't be able to explain it, but it was because you never really let that anger out. Now that's true of many people. And it's true of housewives whose husbands won't let them talk, won't communicate, and then the anger builds up. They try to resolve it, they just try to ignore it. But then they suddenly get migraine headaches. Why? Because of suppressed anger. And maybe an angina, a pain in the chest area, a heart pain. Same thing. So, in other words, we should not negate our feelings, but I'm not saying we should express them. When you're angry, just break a window, break a plate. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying recognize the anger, though. Don't negate it immediately. Okay? Recognize the anger. I am angry. And then pray it out. That's one of the best ways to resolve anger. See, but tell the Lord how you feel. Go to the Lord and say, Lord, you know how I feel? Lousy. Terrible. I feel like smushing him. And then it all gets out. Then after we can straighten out and say, well, Lord, you know how I really feel. You know I don't mean it. But you've said it, see? Like you went to a friend over the phone or whatever. Someone that listens, that doesn't say, oh, you shouldn't have those feelings, and they blame you. They listen. They receive what you're saying. And that's a release. But you're telling it to the best person in the world, the Lord, who can bring calm, peace, and His forgiveness. Now, that's one of the best ways to heal our uncontrolled feelings, especially anger. Sister, you had your hand up.
Greatly, but we fed our anger. We did did it verbally. And I found I had done that most of my life, beating my own anger with what I thought was what the external event was, without really sitting down the way the Lord looked at the event.
Was that book John Powell?
No, it was a guy called Feeling Good by Burns. Powell was good and I met him, but it really didn't come to grips with the way I perceived reality.
Another book that you might be interested in is one by Conrad Barres, in case you don't know him. He's one of the best Christian psychiatrists today. He's honored by the Vatican Academy of Science. And he wrote a book on healing, knowing and healing our emotions. Very good.
This guy, I don't know what to know. I don't, he doesn't take it from a religious perspective, but there's no way you can read it without realizing that what is good and noble and true is part of it.
While we're talking about this idea of feelings, one area that many of us overlook, and that is our resentments. Not many people confess them. And perhaps they're not as guilty as they think because they're not fully aware that all those nasty thoughts that come to them because of something that was done to them are really resentments. But they don't resolve the anger that feeds them. That's the problem. See, when you're unjustly treated by someone, then you walk away from the situation. Hours later, your mind is working on it. And if I were there again, boy, would I give it to her. You know, that's resentment. And then you dream on it, and then you feed it again. But you should react on that. In other words, that's wrong to further that. So the idea there is resolve the situation first. Be forgiving. First of all, even if it's just or unjustified, be forgiving. Say, Lord, I want to forgive, just as you forgive me. And then, unless it can be settled by a direct communication, meantime, give it to the Lord. And say, Lord, I do want to forgive, and I ask for your peace. Pray for the person, ask the Lord's blessing on them. And you'll find that a relative calm will come, depending on how deeply hurt you are. But as often as that resentment surfaces again, you must deal with it. So it's not that easy. See, you'll find these nasty thoughts will be coming back again. Gee, I wish she didn't say that. Now, wait till I see her. I'm going to give her a cold shoulder. And then again, you have to say, Lord, I renounce these thoughts. I don't give in to them. See, they're first feelings again. But as you give in to them, when you know it's wrong, then you must consider yourself responsible. So that area, see, that's all part of anger. Resentment, anger, bitterness, all kind of follows in a sequence. Any other question?
Yes?
Conrad, B-A-A-R-S. And I believe one book is published by Alba House. Some of you know that publishing company. They live on Staten Island. Alba House Publishers, Staten Island. In fact, one of my books on the table there is by their, and the address is in that book, Spirituality of St. Teresa of the Flower. They published that book. You write to the address in there asking for that book, they'll send it to you. Yes? Well, same thing as I told you, but on a child's level. I mean, let them, in other words, approach Jesus as a friend. And because you cannot teach the child to return violence for violence, that's not what the Lord says. And yet, you cannot let this child expose itself like a carpet to everything. So, yet that child needs to deal with the anger that is inside of it. So tell him that those feelings are all part of everybody. Everybody feels anger at different things. That first feeling they have, like somebody pinches you. You cannot say, I don't feel it. You do. You can't help feeling it. See, that's what we call the first movement. So that first feeling of anger is not a sin. But it's when that child says, I don't care if it's wrong. I'm going to get after Joe and I'm going to hit him with a club or something like that. Then it's wrong. Okay? But as long as the anger is with him, he should give it to Jesus and say, Jesus, I know I offend you. You forgive me. So I ought to be forgiving to Joe. But the feelings are still there, Lord. Please help me to be at peace. And then to continue to deal with that. Because one episode of that will not be enough, maybe, if a person is strongly angry. Well, see, they'll take your words literally. And you have to be careful, because they're very logical. See, they're very logical. And you think they should be broad-minded, but they haven't reached that stage. At least they're, until they're 8 and they say, I won't say another word till I call my lawyer. anyone else? Agnes? Well, there are three principles to keep in mind. Serious matter. In anger, that may be a question at sometimes. What is serious matter? May not be easy to define. See, people are angry many times. Usually, you might say it's not a serious sin. It depends on what it leads you to do or to really say and mean. Like if you're angry enough to kill someone and you really mean it, that would be a serious sin. But if it's only an expression that comes to mind, oh, if you do that again, I'm going to kill you. And everybody knows that this is not what you really mean. But the principles, first, of a serious offense, serious matter, sufficient reflection, full consent of the will. All three must be present. So you must establish whether it's serious matter. Was there sufficient reflection on it by that this is a serious sin, I'd better stop? That's sufficient reflection. Now, was there full consent? In anger, many times there isn't full consent because the anger gets ahead of everything and it just bursts out of you. And then full consent of the will? No. Could be serious matter, but not full consent of the will. Those three principles are very important in all lines of the seven capital sins. See, not only in anger, but any one of the other emotions or feelings. It is a big field, a very practical field. To apply all along the line, and especially to, say, sex feelings. They could be serious. Is there sufficient reflection? Could there be, if not sufficient reflection, could there be full consent of the will? No. See, in that order must be serious matter. Now, is there sufficient reflection of whether this is right or wrong? If there isn't, then there cannot be full consent of the will. Now, that's especially true of dreams, of feelings that you have in sleep, of a sex nature, or even touches that happen in sleep. And that's a normal thing for some people. But in normal life, when they're conscious, never crosses their mind. So this is what you call part of just human nature, a humanness, that a person cannot completely suppress. So sex thoughts and dreams may express themselves in touches. Now, what do you have there? Serious matter? Possibly. Is there sufficient reflection? No. They're at most half asleep. In a half sleep, you cannot be fully awake. Could there then be full consent? No. Now, could you go to communion? Yes. You see the implications there. Eh? This is understanding our humanness, dealing with it, and being at peace. It's very important. Any other question? Well, we're still on tape here. Our big brother is listening. Your last chance to be on forever. Well, is there any other question? Something related to what we were talking about? The subject of prayer, as you can see, is a vast field. And perhaps you could put it this way, prayer is as vast as God Himself, because prayer is a relationship. And we all have different relationships with God, different degrees, different levels. And we all experience God in different ways. Would be a good book for that. And also Prayer of Love, The Art of Aspiration that I wrote. It's a green-colored book on that table. It's gradually acclimating and preparing a person for the early stages of contemplation through what we call the Prayer of Love, which is contemplation, a loving look at God. But how that's gradually gradated and a person is brought to that point, and it's a good sequence. It kind of fits everything together. Any other question? Had enough cake? I'm sure on the tape there are going to wonder what this means. Well, for the sake of our tape here, I received a great big sheet cake, and we couldn't all eat it. And we all had our share of it, and we ate with our fingers. And it was finger-licking good. It was for my ordination anniversary. Thanks to Olga. Well, if there are no other questions, we will have to terminate, as the robot says.